B-Pod Studios.
They're Boston's number one afternoon show.
Most powerful sports radio show in New England.
America's number one afternoon sports show.
Yeah, but we're the biggest.
And number one in your heart.
And I just came here to help your ratings.
Sorry, John. Thank you. Don't need it.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, hi, everybody. Welcome to the program. Felger and Maserati coming to you on Tuesday, September 22nd, I think. Maz, how you doing?
Yep, indeed.
Yeah, Maz coming to us from our Town Fair Tire Studios along with Big Jim Murray on location because it's Tuesday during the football season. We talked to Greg Bedard from the Boston Sports Journal. What's up, big boy?
What's up, fellas?
Big Bois Tuesday.
Coming to us via the Zoom. So we've got the regular Greg Bedard stint with 3 Up, 3 Down coming up later this hour. 10 questions in the 3 o'clock hour. And then your calls in and around it on anything you want on the Patriots. So Greg's a great guy to talk football with. So as soon as we disinfect and wipe down the hounds, you may jingle him at 617-779-0985. What were your impressions on Sunday night, Greg?
Well, I was very impressed with the offense. I thought that, look, we went into this season, this game, thinking, all right, well, what are we going to get out of the passing offense? They really didn't do much of it in the opener. We didn't see much of it in training camp. It was a big question mark, and I thought Cam Newton specifically answered a lot of questions in this game just with the touch that he showed, the anticipation that he showed, sort of the next level throwing, like the pass to Edelman. Down the middle to the 1 yard line, that where he looked off the safety, that's next level stuff. The pass to Edelman down the middle, where he flicked the wrist for 50 yards, that's an incredible throw. He had another throw to Edelman down the middle with just outstanding touch, something that I frankly have never seen out of Cam Newton before. So obviously he is taking coaching and getting coaching that he's never done before, and it's really paying off.
Okay, defensively.
Woof.
Seriously, though.
It was, you could just tell from the stats. This was the third time ever under Belichick since 2001 that the opponent had at least 60 plays, and they only got them to 7 third downs. That just tells you that you are just borderline terrible
on
offense.
Yeah, let me just stop you again, folks. And this never even occurred to me. You know,
this is amazing.
They had 7 third downs. They only got to, meaning they spanked you so bad on first and second down that they never even really got into third down situations to get off the field. And just, you know, you didn't hear Greg there. It's only the third time since 2001 that you've given up that few of third downs, so, you know, on 60 plus plays. Only 3 times since 2001 have you failed to get a team into third down that few times.
I mean, and they scored 35 points.
That's
right?
20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Amazing. When I saw that, too, I found that to be amazing.
So what was that, Greg?
Well, a couple of different things. Number one, you got to give a tip of the hat to the Seahawks and Brian Schottenheimer. And when I watched the film, there were some plays – including the DK Metcalf touchdown, I think also the Carson touchdown, there were plays that the Patriots were not prepared for. And I'm not saying that as a rip job on Belichick and the defensive staff. I looked at it more of coming from, this was almost like a COVID game for the Patriots and for the Seahawks. And what I mean by that is the Patriots had Dante Hightower and Patrick Chung. They had all these free agent this exodus of free agents. So the Patriots basically had to spend their offseason on defense, accounting for all that stuff. Who are we going to play where? What are we going to do? Just figuring out what they're going to do on defense. Whereas the Seahawks basically had everybody back on offense, just added Greg Olsen. And it basically looked like Brian Schottenheimer spent all offseason and quarantine thinking up crap to use against the Patriots in week 2. And I chalk a lot of it up to that, but look, there are also some glaring deficiencies on this defense that got exposed in this game, and that's mostly that they're not big enough up front on the defensive line without Bo Allen, that they're not taking up enough blockers up front, And then that's allowing the linebackers to get exposed, and they don't really have any linebackers. And this was the first time, second game, where that really got exposed.
They don't really have any linebackers. This was the second stat that you had that blew me away. The first is that third down stat. They never even got Seattle into third down enough to get them off the field. Never mind getting them off the field on third down. But then you mentioned this about the linebackers. They don't really have any. Juwan Bentley played every snap. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay, that's what you had. He played every snap. Of the 54 linebackers who played at least 46 snaps on Sunday, so of all the linebackers on the field on Sunday, except for the part-time sub guys, of the 54 linebackers who played on Sunday, Pro Football Focus had Bentley rated 52nd. 52nd. So he was the third worst linebacker out there, and he probably played the most. What does that say about your linebacking group?
It's tough. They're in a tough spot, and I'm not sure exactly what they want to do. And I know people.
Greg, hold on. Let me help you. Their linebacking core blows. Now proceed.
So I know a lot of people, their reaction is, well, let's just put safeties on the field. And I'm sure we'll get into it because I was pretty pants off about Kyle Duggar after watching this film. And that's great and all. And we saw Adrian Phillips out there, and we saw Duggar out there at times. And those guys do play a role. Patrick Chung's done in the past. But the problem is you can only do that if you're holding up the blockers on the defensive line. If you have size up front, if you're effective up front, then you can do that. But right now the Patriots aren't effective on the defensive line. They're not big enough. And then that's allowing blockers to get to the second level, and they're just overwhelming these guys. So right now, the way they're currently constituted, a physical team is going to manhandle them up front, and they're just not going to get, they're going to be so good on first and second down that you're not going to get to your third down pressure packages. You're not going to get to your strength of your defense, which is your secondary. If they're in second and three and second and one all day, the secondary is not going to help you. As good as they are, they're not going to help you. You have to get these guys into second and third and long. And on Sunday night, they were completely inept at that.
Well, you mentioned some of the second down and distances in this game. Hold on. So second and one, second and three, second and four. Then they had two where they were second and eight. They got 9 yards on the next play. Second and four, third and one, second and four, second and one, second and seven. They didn't do the job on first and second down. So they're porked on third. I get it. And did you write that they were in nickel or dime the entire game?
The whole game. They didn't play any. They didn't play any base. I don't think they had the personnel to play base. And I'll do you one better, Mike. They have the worst second down defense in the league. So they have to figure out a way to get better on first down, or else they're never going to get to third down and the strength of their defense.
Greg, they don't have the personnel.
Not right now.
They don't have the personnel.
I'm to the point where I'm toying with putting Chase Winovich at linebacker. That's to the point I am right now.
Yeah, I mean, Bentley to me looked awful in that game. I said this yesterday. There was one play in particular that stuck out to me. He got turned around and couldn't shed the block.
Played every play.
He was invisible in the game, and when I did notice him, he was getting held up. I mean, he couldn't get through anything. So he scares me. And Greg, as you say all this, I know I'm sort of jumping ahead here a little bit. Typically, we start with the last game. The Raiders have a good offensive line, do they not?
Hell,
is this
yeah.
at all a concern now for the Oakland game? The Vegas game?
I do want to see where they are with their injury report because, now that Trent Brown got paid after his 1 year with the Patriots, he decides when he wants to play now, which is why the Patriots didn't pay him. And also they had another, I think Incognito was out, who's outstanding at guard. But if they get those two guys back, this is borderline one of the best offensive lines in the league, along with all the tight ends that they have. And Josh Jacobs is right up there with the best running backs in this league.
Okay. Do you want to talk to Greg about that? The way Newton looked, the way the offense looked, the concerns on defense, which seem very real for the big boy here. Again, 617-779-0985. Final thought before the first break. Greg, your thoughts on how they handled the end of that ball game the other night in Seattle. Did they leave a play on the table with how they called timeouts? How'd you feel about the final play call?
I didn't have an issue with any of it. I understand maybe trying to want to squeeze one more play out of it, but I don't want to be left without a timeout at the end in case something does happen where you're tackled short of the goal line. And plus, having that timeout allows you to throw short of the goal line, which is often when you get those scores. Instead of just throwing three or four times into the end zone, I don't like that. So I didn't have a huge problem with that. I thought that the Edelman play, the throw to Edelman, that was the play that should have won the game. Newton just missed it. It was there. It should have been there. The final play of the game, I don't really have a problem with the final play. I don't. That package had worked for them. McDaniels, to that point, had given three different looks. They ran the power to the left. They had a counter that they busted out, and they had the pop pass. And yes, it was predictable, and yes, the Seahawks were going for it. But if Onwenu blocks it correctly, if he doesn't just block down, if he stays head up and doesn't allow Collier to cross his face, that's a touchdown. They score. So the kid just missed a block in his second NFL game. It happens. But the other thing about that is...
But didn't Collier play it different?
Yes, they slanted instead of pinched. But still, he's got to be ready for that. He can't just block down. He's got to react to the blocker. And they were ready for Bobby Wagner running through. Mason came off and blocked him. And the other thing that no one's really talked about is, and I'm sorry, it does come in week two. In week 14, it would be different. But how many goal line plays do you think this team has repped so far with, you know, bringing everybody along and teaching Cam the scheme? Like, you know, and plus they had run a two-point conversion also. They're very limited in that package right now. I was fine with it. I don't care if it's predictable. You should be able to say, tell Seattle what you're going to do with the amount of weight that they had on the field, how they outweighed the Seahawks.
The weight.
They should have been able.
I just add up the weights.
296 pounds. Well, let's just
sign a bunch of sumo wrestlers and put out there you could outweigh them by 2,000 pounds. What does that mean?
From 1 yard, you should be able to muscle that through.
Seattle outsmarted you. Seattle was one step ahead. How does that taste?
The block.
One step ahead. They were ready. They were ready for you. How does that take? How could so many people support that play when Pete Carroll and Seattle were one step ahead of you on that?
Greg, I'm sorry. You said Onwenu in his what number game of his career? What number?
Second.
How many games has Bill Belichick coached?
I don't know.
500-ish.
So what?
So I blame the coach. I just think there was one option on the play. One option and one option only. There was nothing else to check into. It was nothing. To me, that was the mistake. I don't mind the running. But there was just nothing else to go to. It was so telegraphed it wasn't funny.
Did I miss the point where they, and I know you acknowledged this yesterday, that where they did throw to the fullback earlier, and did I also miss that they had two tight ends on the field? Those guys can catch passes, plus the tackle eligibles that they had on the field. They have options, but it's the second game of the year for a new offense, and I'm sorry, but I'm going down with the play. One play to win the game. I'm going with the play that we have repped the most, and I'm keeping the ball in my best player's hands.
Pete Carroll outsmarted you. How could that possibly taste good in your mouth?
Seriously.
He did great on 3rd and 1 before that. Yeah.
He outsmarted you on the one play that mattered. That's all I know, which I never
want. No, he didn't.
I mean, how could
he just miss the block?
Yeah, you know, again, we had a pretty good idea what they were going to do. And, you know, again, LJ jumped right in there and, you know, Bill made a stupid decision.
Seattle played it different. All right, so your thoughts on everything Greg had to say there. Cam Newton is obviously still on the table. Looks like a little bit of a different guy. Bill also spoke about that yesterday. We'll hear that and get right to you, I promise, with the big boy right after these words.
Felger and Mats on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go on the Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
By and large, we don't remember the last segment.
Felger and Mads.
I mean, I don't remember what I said last segment.
I don't remember what I said 60 seconds ago.
Felger and Mads.
You don't remember who we are or what we said last week.
Yeah, but Felger, I'm the highlight of your show.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Yeah, Cam's worked really hard on his throw mechanics, and I've seen significant improvement in the last, during that time. You know, Cam's the type of guy, when you point out something to him and ask him to work on it, he works very hard. And he really tries to, you know, to do it the way that you ask him to do it. So I can't, I can't ask him to do any more than what he's doing, but he's definitely made some modifications in his mechanics and his delivery. I think that's helped his accuracy and the timing a little bit. And, you know, Coach Fish and Coach McDaniels, as well as Cam, you know, have worked very hard on, you know, certain things that we're doing that maybe he hasn't done as much of in the past, or we're doing a little differently, whatever the case might be. But, you know, he works very hard at his fundamentals and techniques and the execution of the passing game, and the results have been, you know, positive, and I'd say, you know, significantly better on those certain types of plays that you know, those adjustments need to be made on.
There's Belichick taking some credit for the way Cam Newton has looked early on. Does Belichick deserve that credit mechanically, Greg? Can you see a difference with Newton before we get back to the phones?
Absolutely. I mean, Cam, in the past when I've studied him, and I watched him a bunch, his MVP season of 2015 when they went to the Super Bowl and the run-up to that, and his mechanics are they're inconsistent. And even now, they're not perfect. There are some throws where his footwork is poor. But I would say he's much better now, and the mechanics are one thing, but the anticipation that I saw him throwing, you know, before, and what I mean by that is as receivers are coming out of their breaks or before they're even coming out of their breaks, that's something I've never seen out of him before.
So I they're clearly working on it, and he's clearly taking it, which is the best news of all.
Absolutely.
A guy, you know, that long in the league and has had that much success, not always a guarantee he's going to take the coaching. There are a lot of established quarterbacks who would not.
Tells you a lot, doesn't it?
You have Aaron Rodgers came here and they gave him a tweak to his throwing motion. What do you think he'd say?
No shot.
Go F yourself.
Right.
You know, or Peyton Manning or something. I mean, a lot of guys. So I think that's a great sign by Newton that he's taking that coaching. All right, to the phones here with Greg Bedard. Alan in the car. Alan, lead us off today. What do you got?
Yeah, I was wondering when I heard the interview with Belichick and they said, you know, why didn't you take a timeout? Why didn't you stop the clock? He's like, blah, blah, blah. It made me wonder if he really relied on Tom for that time management at the end. He wasn't even thinking about it.
So I don't agree with that. I think he relies on Ernie or someone else. And so maybe his bitchiness was that he didn't want to throw an assistant coach under the bus. But I think it's more along the lines of, you're not allowed to question me. He's just being a baby about the whole thing.
Well, to me, that's what it is.
And I think, Greg, they left a play on the table there. I think they could have run four plays instead of three. And, you know, as simple as that. And, you know, I don't necessarily need them throwing four times into the end zone from the 13. I'm with you on that. I don't know what the percentages look like on that. But they easily could have called timeout, and it was with 29, not 27 seconds. And then you could have clocked one of them. You could have run a play out of bounds to get closer. You could have done a lot of different things. And you would have lost the net, right, the safety net of running out of time, but I would trust Bill Belichick to manage that properly.
I mean, and again, remember, all they have to do is run three plays and leave 1 second on the clock.
Exactly.
Mike, can I mention one thing?
And please.
This is probably a little bit irrelevant, but really the one time since I've been covering Belichick where I had a real issue about their in-game coaching and decisions was at that stadium in, I think it was 2012, the Tavon Wilson game.
Oh yeah, they butchered that at halftime.
That same end zone, they completely screwed the pooch and left points on the board. And I don't know, maybe it's just that stadium, that side of the field. I don't know, but it was similar circumstances. I would have liked to have seen them clock it right after the Edelman reception, but you know, that's me.
I remember that well. I do. I remember they got no points down there because they screwed up the clock.
They were
I remember
on the 1 yard line. They screwed
that
it up.
That game is forever etched in my memory. I will never forget that game.
I wonder if that was in Bill's mind that they didn't have a timeout at the end of the game and they or at the end of the half and they screwed the pooch then and he decided he wasn't going to do that again.
You know, I mean, I don't think he epically mismanaged the thing. I mean, you still got a play at the 2 yard line or 1 yard line. So, like, he didn't butcher it. I would just rather have them have four plays there versus three. That's all. Simple as that.
And again, if you complete a pass over the middle of the field, how far do you have to run to set up again?
Yes, it's 9-10 seconds.
Right. I mean, it's easy to clock the ball in that spot.
And again, I think it was the – I think the game came down to the Edelman pass. Newton missed it. It was there. He missed it. That was the ball game.
Okay, Michael in North Andover. Go ahead, Michael.
Very quickly, I'm about to bash Sony Michel, but right before, I had really no issue with the last play that they ran. The only thing is that I might have slipped the tight end out to the middle of the end zone, and if the run wasn't there, I'd do a quick jump pass. You never know. But overall, I just wanted to bash on Sony Michel really quick. That guy, as an ode to you guys, he sucks and blows, Felga. He's awful. Oh, my God. Like, you have some runs where he runs hard, but a majority of the time, he goes down when a 3-mile-an-hour gust of wind comes by. He is absolutely terrible, Felga.
I don't know what he does. Michael, thank you for the call. I'll say it. I don't know what he does. Well, I don't know what his plus skill is. Greg, does he suck and blow?
He's okay. I mean, he's exactly what we talked about. He is what's blocked for him. That's it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, you know, that, no, well, that, I definitely want to spend a first-round pick on that.
Yes, that's exactly what I think I should spend a first-round pick on, a guy who runs what's blocked for him.
But Greg, perfect. They don't use him in the passing game at all, so were they better off playing Rex Burkhead more?
And they did.
Well, they had to. I mean, with the James White situation, Burkhead basically assumed the James White role. But I think we're all waiting for Damian Harris to come back. He'll be eligible to play in week 4, and they got to make do with what they have right now.
Chris, I mean, what did Michel play in this game? 15 snaps? Is it something like that? I think it was 15 snaps. And he barely played, which again tells you how bad he sucks.
Chris and Raynham, what do you got?
Hey, guys, what is your problem with Pete Carroll? Were you guys like beat boys back in 99 and he abused you? Because I think you guys think of him as like the ugly chick in high school who got hot, and now you still think of her as the ugly chick. He's been the second best coach for maybe the last 10 years, and you guys talk about him like he's some retread bum from the Dolphins.
I know.
He has taken this team, and he fits well. He's older than Belichick, and he relates to the younger people so much better than Belichick does. You don't hear any issues coming from that team. Russell Wilson was a fourth-round pick that he's turned into the best quarterback in the league. What is your issue with him?
What are you talking about? You don't hear any issues. There was an open mutiny on that team after the Malcolm Butler play, and as those years went on with Richard Sherman and everything. Are you kidding me? And there was a massive division in that locker room with Russell Wilson and some other guys, and that, like a whole that open, it opens up a whole nother thing that I don't know what Pete could have done about it, but to say that there's no issues on that Seattle team is just wrong. There are big issues on that team. I was a beat boy in Pete's last year, and he was great to me. I liked him a lot. Like, he was good to everybody. Like, he was a good guy to work with and cover. There's no, you know, itch to scratch there with me. I think the fact that he's the second or third or fourth best coach in the league tells you how lousy the coaching is. I just don't think he's a great tactician at all. Close.
He inherited an immensely talented team.
Look, I've said a million times, his defense
here,
is,
I mean, here.
Yeah, his defenses are good. He's good at identifying guys who can play in his defense. But other than that, I mean, look, he's got now the second or third best quarterback in the league, maybe the best quarterback in the league, and he's won once in 11 years. So the clock's ticking. You know, he's trending towards underachievement there. And I'm sorry, he only won once at USC. For all the pants-off accolades he gets for USC, he only won once there, too, and gagged a huge game away in that one, too, that people don't hold against him. I just think, again, if he's the second-best coach, it means the rest of the coaches blow, is what that means. And it makes the way that game ended on Sunday night even worse. He outsmarted you. He did. The poodle. Pete's outsmarted you. Yuck. Sorry. Do you have a thought, Craig?
No, just go ahead.
Okay, yeah, fine. Three up, three down, right after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You can listen to Felger and Mass on your phone with the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
Frankly, it's what we deserve. We're a nation of idiots.
Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, it's time for 3 up.
Dives to the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots.
Nice call.
And 3 down.
I don't even understand the call. You're trying to go vertical on 3rd and 4. I'd rather run him on a slant. With his size.
With Greg Bedard of BostonSportsJournal.com. 3 up.
And the Patriots have won their 6th Super Bowl title.
3 down.
He sucks.
He blows.
Here on Felger
and Mez.
All right, who sucked in blue and who was good in this game? Bedard's got his clipboard. He's ready to roll. Maz is ready to chime in, as always. Who was the number one star for the Patriots? One up there, Greg, from Sunday night.
Cam Newton, no question. I had him for 15-plus plays, including 10-plus throws, which is almost unheard of. That's something Brady would do in an outstanding game also. So how many, I thought Newton was tremendous.
How many minus throws did you have with him? Do you have it there, or are you going to fumble around on your paperwork here?
About five.
Okay.
He did have his share of minus plays, a few questionable decisions, but the good was just outweighed the bad.
We're going to get to this later on in the show. I think the Cam Newton hype train has
oh boy, out of control.
It is exceeding the recommended speeds coming around the bend. So, like, there's not enough attention paid to some of the bad throws. I mean, just for example, the interception that he threw. He threw almost the identical kind of pass in the second quarter, and it should have been intercepted by the same player on the same kind of route, I think. It was Dunbar on that out to Bird that he underthrew again, and Dunbar dropped the interception. So, when it was good, it was good, but there was a few more clunky throws than people are giving it credit for. Anyway.
Also Newton. In the words of Scott David Zolak, I don't even know if his middle name is David, but I threw that in there. There's your quarterback. Patriots have a quarterback. That to me, that was the takeaway in this game. They have a quarterback.
Second star, Greg.
David Andrews. The Patriots only allowed 13% pressure in this game. Some of the guys had issues along the lines, but not David Andrews. He was outstanding in the middle again.
Julian Edelman. I told you I didn't love some of the drops. I think he had a couple. But overall, when he needed him, he was there, man. I went Edelman second.
Why do you disagree, big boy?
I thought he had other plays, and he had a tough time. There were a few blocking plays that he also missed, including the Rex Burkhead screen. If Edelman makes his block, it's a walk-in touchdown. There were other plays like that. Obviously, he's hurt and dealing with stuff, and I know that's probably factoring into it, but he came up balls at the end of the game. He did. I'm not going to deny that, but there were also other plays in the game that were kind of choppy.
He missed a block in week one too.
Are you saying on Burke, you know about like that little flip pass on third down to Burkhead? Is that what you're talking about?
No, there was one in the red zone or about the 25 yard line that I think he went down to about the 5 or 6 yard line. That should have been a touchdown.
Okay. Third star.
Maz, did you go?
Number two for me was Edelman.
I'm sorry about that.
Okay, sorry.
So both Newton and Edelman. This is boring. Who's your? Oh no, you went.
Edelman, I went Edelman. Right? He didn't. He went Andrews. He picked a fat guy.
The center, of course. Go ahead. Yep. Third star,
Kyle Duggar. I thought the kid was outstanding in this game. He was one of the few guys on defense that was actually making plays and affecting the game, including, you know, everybody went pants off when Chase Winovich ran over a running back. I mean. Who cares? I mean, have you ever heard the football saying backers on backs equals sacks? I mean, that's what he's supposed to do. He weighs 250 pounds. The running back weighs 210 pounds. He's supposed to blow his ass up. On the same play, Kyle Duggar blew up a guard, knocked him back like 7 yards and helped get the sack. So, and Duggar's just, I'm all in on the kid. I want him to start. I want him to play every snap. The kid is, he has the potential to be Jamal Adams for this defense. That's how good the kid is looking.
Whoa.
He's all over the place.
I'll defer to you on Duggar. I'm going to start paying more attention there.
Okay. I guess I have to now.
I went N'Keal Harry. All things considered, I thought this game to me was about the passing attack. And N'Keal Harry was a part of that. He was a reliable player in this game. I give Harry credit. I thought he was pretty good.
I feel like Greg's making another face at you.
A little bit. I mean, you know, look, he was fine. It was an improvement. It was a step forward. He just wasn't one of the three best Patriots in this game. There's no way.
I don't really care what you think, right?
Three duds. Okay. Who was your number one dud, big boy?
Jason McCourty, Mr. Two Touchdowns. Can we talk about this for a second?
Yep.
Why is Jason McCourty playing over J.C. Jackson at all, ever? Why is this happening?
Because he's Devin's brother.
Jimmy, why do you think Jason McCourty's playing over J.C. Jackson?
Hush money.
Look, something like that. It's something like that. Yes.
Devin McCourty.
Exactly. There's the McCourtys are Belichick's two of his agents.
You have to do certain things
for stars to make stars happy, and that's one of them. Jason McCourty starts over whoever might be a better player, in my opinion.
Bill's got to feed his locker room cartel. That's what that is.
You know that expression, you got to take the bad with the good? In this case, it's you got to take the bad McCourty with the good McCourty. That's the deal. To get Devin to come back and play, they had to pay his brother.
I mean, isn't that the answer, Greg?
I mean, look, the David Moore touchdown, that was a great play, and he had good coverage. The other one, he got deked when he should have gotten deked. But my thing is like, look, if Belichick really thinks that Jason McCourty is better than J.C. Jackson, then why don't you trade Stephon Gilmore and just start the both of them? Like, what are we doing here? You already tried to trade Stephon Gilmore twice. So if Jason McCourty's so good, start him and J.C. Jackson and just let's get on with it then.
I like it. Mass?
Well, I'm glad you brought him up. Stephon Gilmore, he's my number one. How many plays is this guy going to get and how many penalties? How many is he going to give up? How much yardage is he going to give up this year? Defensive player of the year, wanted a pay raise, the whole nine yards. Like, to me, based on relative to expectation, he's been, Gilmore to me, has been one of the most disappointing players on the team, if not the single most disappointing.
Second dud, Greg.
Stephon Gilmore. He's in my bottom three for the second straight week, Mr. $5 million. Look, he just hasn't been good. He's gone against two physical receivers. I mean, thank goodness Devontae Parker got hurt in the first game, because who knows what would have happened. But he's gone against two physical receivers in the first 2 weeks, and he's got shoved around.
Juwan Bentley, awful. Awful, awful, awful. And that was before I saw Bedard stat on
every
him.
Play.
Oh, he really, he was bad.
That's how bad their linebackers are. He was, again, Pro Football Focus ranked all the linebackers who played on Sunday. He was 52 out of 54 guys who had a certain amount of snaps. So he was one of the worst linebackers on the field all Sunday in the NFL, and he played every snap. What does that tell you how bad their linebacking
was? Brutal. Again, and look, last year he was coming off a knee injury. I thought he looked slow. This year he looks like he's in better shape to me. And I don't know if it's that he doesn't have the strength now or what, but I thought he was getting pushed around.
Okay, third dud, Greg.
I could have gone Bentley, but I'm going to go slightly different. I'm going to go Isaiah Wynn. I thought he had a tough time on the left side. This was a game where the lack of a preseason really showed up, where you can try to practice or try to simulate or watch as much film about the Seahawks, but playing against them and their speed is completely different. And Wynn was really overwhelmed at certain points in this game.
Sony Michel, all together now.
He sucks.
He blows.
He's awful.
Terrible.
Yeah, Sony Michel, to me, like, useless. Again, and you need a back in this game with whiteout. Burkhead played 71% of the snaps or something. Michelle barely got on the field, and when he did, he sucked. He played 15 snaps. He got the ball 10 times, and he gained 17 yards or whatever it was. Useless. Useless.
Let's pick this up on the other side. More calls with Greg Bedard in our long commercial-free segment next.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Bill, the final drive, we talked about it a little bit after the game, just with the benefit of time. How did you feel the scenario played out, holding that timeout a little bit? You know, after Edelman made the catch with 28 seconds left, you guys had three plays after that.
Yeah, I feel good about it.
That was it. Bill can be such a baby. Seriously. He did go back and explain it, though. He did. He was given another chance. Someone circled back. I don't remember who it was. This is a conference call yesterday. We didn't get to this stuff yesterday, so I just want you to hear it, because I've spent quite a bit of time on it. And I do think that the Pats left one play on the table. Much rather them have four cracks at it there than three. And there's definitely different ways they could have done it. So I think they should have called a timeout right then and there. And whether Bill froze or just overthought it or something, I didn't like the approach. You would increase your odds with one more play, and then Bill didn't own it afterwards, which just sort of bugs me. It's like, he won't even lower himself to explain it. But he did. So someone else circled back to the question later on in the press conference. And he did give a longer answer about why they approached it that way. Here's the answer.
We were able to stop the clock and get the play run that we wanted to run. You know, that was the critical play in the game. You know, unfortunately, it didn't work out. But I think that's the position you want to be in, not, you know, having to race up to the ball and, you know, try to come up with something, you know, especially on a 1 yard line at the, you know, at the last second. I mean, it's doable, but it's hard to do. You know, when you have the team on the run in a 2 minute drill and you can go to the line and run the play, that you're familiar with running and try to, you know, score while they're, you know, while they're scrambling a little bit, you know, there's certainly some merit to that, but, I'm fine with the way that, you know, we ended up with, you know, a chance to run the play that we wanted to run at the end of the game. You know, that just didn't work out. So, you know, I would take that over a lot of other situations that could come up.
Okay, well, this is true. It wasn't the worst case. And it's not the worst clock management I've ever seen.
Was it that hard to just answer it like that?
Right. So finally, like a crowbar, finally. Yes. Okay. I get it. I see you. I'm just not sure that they were processing all that in real time. You know, I think in hindsight, he says, well, you don't want to be rushing up to the line. To which I say, well, why not? I mean, if you're one step ahead. I mean, this is a one step ahead kind of team. So why can't you have a second play ready to roll? Why can't you have your guys, even though it's been COVID, you know, no camp and all this, I mean, have them ready to go. This is our strength. This is our advantage, is the coaching of it. So, but, you know, like, I get it. I all that being said, I'd still rather, it all comes down to simple math. I'd rather them run four plays down there than three. Simple as that. I think you increase your odds. But anyway, that was Bill's full explanation. We can go back to the phones. We've had a little bit of a phone problem, so I think we've rectified it. If you want to call it, 617-779-0985. There's a couple open lines here for Bedard. Here's Cam and Taunton. Hi, Cam.
Hey, Felger. I just want to ask you quickly about what I think was the absolute number one most predictable part of the start of the NFL season. And that was your boy Aaron Rodgers gets off to a great start in the media campaign about how wronged he was by the team when they took Jordan Love. It was the most predictable part of the season, everyone coming to his defense, because he has played great, and the media campaign about how wronged and screwed over he was by the team for them taking Love. So I just want to hear your thoughts about
that. Oh, yeah, he's one of these untouchable franchise quarterbacks. It's just Teflon. No one gets on, ever. So aggravating. And so I agree with that piece to it. But I don't agree that it was totally predictable. I think Rodgers could have gone the other way, because I think he's kind of a baby, kind of a prima donna. And so the Packers challenge him. They bring in his replacement. And it would not have surprised me if he'd gone in the other direction, pouted and took his ball and went home. Instead, he looks kind of motivated because he looks kind of good. He looks really good. They've looked better on offense the first 2 weeks than they looked all of last year.
I mean, their offense has been off the charts good so far. Off the charts good. Do they lead the league in points? They must.
I'm not sure, but
they got it. I mean, I don't know who else would be up there. To me, they've been awesome.
John in Buffalo, what do you got for the big boy?
Oh, my gosh, the big boy. If it wasn't for Bill Belichick, you'd be teaching high school social studies. You know that's true, big boy. You know it.
And what's wrong with high school social studies?
Yeah. What's wrong with being a teacher?
No, it's all good. I'm just saying, dude. What do they say about the fire truck or whatever it is? You're being pulled by somebody else, dude. You ain't no truck. You look like one. Why don't you tell me
again? Hey.
Sucks, dude. Tell me how much Josh Allen
I've worked in other markets.
Here, hold on one second. What's all this anger coming from the guy in Buffalo?
Seriously, yeah. What's your problem? Seriously,
I figured it was it must be a Josh Allen like hurt butt type of thing. I don't know.
2-year-old kid, you're a grown man telling him he sucks. You're a grown man,
John.
A grown man saying the kid sucks.
Saying who sucks?
Yeah, Josh Allen.
He's not a kid, so he's calling because his phone blows. He's all angry at you for saying Josh Allen sucks.
Apparently,
he does. Yes. Well, I mean, Greg's like the guys. Like, everybody thinks he sucks.
Exactly, Ryan. Why Bedard?
Why are we singling out Greg?
I think Josh Allen sucks too. Pick on me.
When that guy looks in the mirror, deep down, he knows in his soul he sucks.
Well, so we have more Josh Allen coming up. I've defended Josh Allen. I think there's a lot of upside to that player. And I think the Bills are right to stick with him and to try and develop him, because if he ever figures it out, look out. And by the way, in the first 2 weeks, he's been look out.
He's improving.
Okay, so we're going to get to that. I mean, I've actually been on the pro Josh Allen side, you know, fully acknowledging, you know, what an idiot he plays like half the time. I mean,
that play against Houston
was a great job
year.
In the playoff game. That was a great job.
Wait, chucks the ball over his head? I mean, yeah. With 2 minutes left in the game? Like, no, the kid's got a long way to go, but there's some raw ability there. I actually think he's decent, has a chance. Is this Nathan? You're up next. Go ahead, Nathan, on line five.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I had a question about the Patriots trying to get a move to get maybe another playmaker. I was thinking Lev Bell in New York. I know he's hurt right now, but wouldn't he be kind of a good versatile back and weapon that Cam could use in that offense to try to add some versatility?
I'd rather have James White back. You know, I don't know. I don't need another running back. And I know all the fans, Greg, are going to, you know, weapons for Brady and stretch the field and all of this. They need help on defense in the middle. They need linebackers. That's the number one need. And I said this yesterday. After what you saw Sunday night in Seattle, I wonder if they look at it and say, this might be a team worth adding to and investing in. You know, I thought this was a reset year on the payroll and the cap and all of that. And, you know, but do you think they might look at their team differently now after Sunday night?
I think so. And I do think – I think they need to look long and hard at the defense and see if this is going to be an issue or is a one-off against Seattle. I mean, I do worry about them against physical fronts like, you know, Buffalo and you know, let alone the Ravens and the Chiefs and those teams. But, you know, I Felger, I'm starting to come over to your side a little bit in terms of the piece that they need to add. I'm now coming over to the tight end side because that Devin Asiasi hasn't sniffed the field in the first 2 weeks. Not even for, like, if they thought the kid had potential as a playmaker down the middle of the field, which I knew that they did at some point, how do you not dial up, like, one play for him at some point? And that they haven't done that to this point, I'm starting to worry about that a bit and whether he's going to contribute this year.
Well, so, interior of the D and the front seven's a bigger concern.
Me too.
They have a massive hole there.
Is he going to do anything this year?
Well, you tell me that was your guy.
I don't know. The team evaluated him the way that Danny Shelton thing worked. The Patriots did not want to sign Danny Shelton, even though it worked out that publicly the reports came out that he agreed to terms with the Lions. The Patriots had agreed to terms with Bo Allen before that. So they had picked Bo Allen ahead of Danny Shelton. On film, it was a little sketchy. I wasn't that enamored with him as far as an upgrade over Danny Shelton, but I don't know. He's been on a milk carton since he's gotten here. I don't know what he can do. Nobody really in the building knows what's wrong with him. I don't know what's going on.
How is your guy, Lawrence guy, how's Lawrence guy playing?
Outstanding. I mean, if it wasn't for him, forget it. This defense wouldn't stop anybody ever. He's been great.
Well, so this is why I do have to, I'm with Maz on this, just so I can tell by his tone. If Lawrence guy is so great and this Duggar kid is so great, why are they allowing like 8 yards of play on first down and the fewest amount of third down opportunities in 20 years and all that is? Like, how come the defense can't stop a nosebleed if those guys have been so great?
How many players on defense?
I knew you'd say that.
11.
How many?
I think 11.
I knew you'd say 11.
Okay.
Although 11. The way the Patriots play it, I sometimes think it's 8.
Interesting. Yeah, and you know, when you go out there and you have like 8 defensive backs on the field and the other team wants to run and push you around, that's kind of an issue.
Yeah, but you know why they have 8 defensive backs? Because their linebackers suck. So Adrian Correct. Phillips is effectively a linebacker. That's what they do. They did this with Chung too, right? And I get the logic when you're playing teams that can throw, particularly the tight end. Why have a linebacker out there who can't run when you can put a strong safety out there and get coverage and good tackling? I get it. But now the problem is they don't have any linebackers who can tackle. So who can run? How many safeties can you put on the field at once?
Right, exactly. And the problem is like you could do the safety thing if you wanted to. If you had a good defensive line and you had like, you know, one good middle linebacker. But right now, the Patriots are the Chargers from 2 years ago that came out here with one defensive and all defensive backs and got run over by the Patriots. Right now, that's the Patriots on defense, except the Patriots have cornerbacks, but if you can't get them in the long yardage, those cornerbacks don't matter.
Let's pick this up on the other side. No commercials. Quick update, and then we're right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.